Hungry Root delivers a weekly box of vegan and gluten-free convenience foods. With over 75 dishes to choose from, each box includes everything customers need to make breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks in less than 15 minutes. Or choose from ready-to-eat options. To try for yourself, go to hungryroot.com and use the promo code HAPPINESS for $25 off each of your first two deliveries. That's a total savings of $50. All you have to do is go to hungryroot.com and use the promo code HAPPINESS. If you enjoy The Science of Happiness, leave us a rating and a comment with your thoughts. It really helps us get it out there so others can listen to it too.
So I'm going to tell you a story. It is my genetic testing story.
Oh my goodness, okay.
I knew since I was basically like in preschool, my brother and I both knew we were adopted. After my mother passed, I decided I was going to do 23andMe and Ancestry.com. And I was reading about it.
I just remember thinking, don't do too much, don't move, don't interrupt, you know, just really focus.
First of all, surprise number one, when the results came back, I found out I'm 60% European and 27% African.
Now, white, black.
Yes.
So, in that moment, that's different from what you thought originally. How did you feel?
I basically broke down. I was upset about it. Just, you know, I'd had this perception or this feeling in an African-American family, an African-American community, sort of really embracing that and that being my life, that large of a percentage, which sort of threw everything that I had believed and that I'd even seen in writing out the window. I mean, it said both of my parents were black. If I'm 60% white, that's probably not true.
Wow. Wow. That's... And how old were you when you found this out?
Oh, this was just a few months ago.
Oh, so this is
this
as an
year.
Adult. Oh, my gosh.
So the ancestry matched me to a very close relative. I found her. She's in Michigan. I'm from Flint, Michigan. I contacted her, and we believe that we're actually half-sisters. Same father, who is white, who lives in Arizona, and she says that it was not necessarily a consensual relationship that he had with her mother, but I had decided I was going to send a card to him and basically say, this is my name, this is my birth date, this is where I was born. Do you want to be in contact with me? Check yes or no. If no, can you please send me the name of who my mother might be?
That's a really heavy thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. I've bought the card. I have the card, the stamps, everything. I have not done it yet. I'm not quite sure why. I just don't bite the bullet and do it.
I mean, I can understand the confusion or even the uncertainty. That's a hard thing to decide to do. I mean, what happens if he says, are you ready for what could be on the other side of it? For the yes or the no?
I'm probably more ready for the no than I would be for the yes.
Is that what scares you?
Maybe.
The yes?
Yeah.
I mean, you are a journalist, so you said investigative, and this sounds like you're going to get an answer.
One way or the other, I'm sure I'll get an answer.
And the question is, are you ready for it?
It is a real honor and a privilege to have Tanzina Vega with us today as our Science of Happiness guinea pig. Tanzina has contributed to CNN. She's written for the New York Times. She's an Emmy Award winner. And most recently has taken over the host position at The Takeaway. Tanzina, it's really a delight to have you in the role of guinea pig today.
Thank you. Thank you. Willingly, yes.
Thank you so much. You chose to, as a guinea pig, one of my favorite exercises, which is active listening. What was the practice like? What did you do?
I was supposed to sit down with someone for at least 10 minutes and have a conversation with them, or they were going to have a conversation with me, and I was supposed to listen and not just let things go right over my head, but really listen. And some of the ways that you, from this exercise, are supposed to show listening is by asking questions, being empathetic. I was with Dana Roberson, who's one of our producers, and we sat in the studio here and I didn't even have notes on a computer. Like, it was just on a piece of paper, the time required, like everything was, you know, no distractions.
Old school.
Now, very old school, which I actually like paper. So I know people think that's crazy, but I like it. And so, yeah, it was old school, and it was, I think, a way to make sure that we were doing this. So I was very aware of what I was doing in the exercise. It was like, okay, I'm going to listen to this story. And, of course, it's a great story.
Oh, my God.
So that helped.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, there were times when I wanted to be like, oh, my God, then what? But wait a minute. You know, like, I wanted to jump in, and I thought, no, don't do that, you know. You'll mess up the exercise, and then Science of Happiness will think you're a failure.
It'll crash. So, we'll give you a right, C- in happiness.
Right. I can't have that on my record, you know?
No. So why did you choose active listening?
Well, I do a lot of listening for my job, and I think sometimes I don't know if it's sort of the way my brain works. I think I'm a New Yorker. I tend to be thinking about multiple things at the same time. All the time, and especially in news, you know, we're constantly pivoting from one thing to the other. And so I think in general, even though I use this skill in my day-to-day life, in my professional life, how good am I really at listening, right? And it was sort of a test to see, well, am I really that good at it? I mean, I can ask questions, I can have a great conversation, but that's not the same as listening.
Well, how so? Because we've all encountered people who ask questions in coercive fashions.
So I felt very, very on guard during this interview because I was like, okay, I'm not going to jump in. I'm not going to say this. I'm going to. And I almost thought that I was maybe too quiet, but I don't know. You know, it was like, okay, I'm going to really focus on this and really try not, you know, no phones coming out, no Twitter,
yeah,
nothing, you know, just this person and this story.
Thank you.
It's hard.
I have to ask you this, Tanzina, because this is your job. And the active listening practice comes out of this old tradition, kind of the nonviolent communication tradition, which is really influential in schools and so forth, where, you know, you paraphrase what people are saying, you ask questions, you use your body and words to express empathy, you don't give advice, which, was that tough?
You know what? The giving advice part wasn't. I find unsolicited advice giving really annoying when it happens to me. And so I try to be as mindful as I can, unless the person is asking me for advice. I just tend to shut up and not. So that was one of the easier ones for me to do.
What was hard?
I'd say the, like, just allowing the conversation to happen and not wanting to jump in at times and be like, oh, wait a minute, but, you know, but what about this? And but what about that? You know, when someone's telling you about, you know, they're trying to do that genealogy history and find, you know, birth parents and go down roads that we may not want to, you know, necessarily feel comfortable going down. And then you add race to the equation. I mean, it was just fascinating.
Ah, it was a revelation. You know, one of the really interesting questions is how this exercise, which is really about friendship and dignity and respect and conveying, you know, your appreciation for the person you're listening to. What was it like for you to do this exercise?
I think that what we miss, we being Americans, we, you know, we just did a segment recently about being overworked.
Yeah.
And part of that problem, and again, I know you guys know this, is that it increases your levels of stress. It makes it difficult for you to connect with people.
Yeah.
We're not paying attention. Like, your brain is firing on 10 different cylinders and, you know, everything from your emails, your text, to this, to that. And so it makes it so hard for us to focus.
Yeah.
And that lack of focus, I think, also creates a lack of intimacy.
Yeah.
I feel like we're more connected, quote unquote, in some ways, and we're so much more disconnected from each other. And I think about all these trends in loneliness and everything else, and I just think about how often is it that we're able to sit down and really understand somebody and have moments of vulnerability. And I think having those conversations with people where you're sharing pretty intimate stuff is something that in the United States, I don't think we value that. You know, I feel like we're a society that doesn't want to be very intimate. And yet we're voyeuristic, which are two different things, right?
Yeah.
We love watching reality TV and we love watching people pull their hair and get drunk and fight, but that's not intimacy.
Yeah.
So having that conversation like that with Dana, who I haven't known for very long either, is vulnerable and it's intimate. And I miss that, you know? I think we could use a lot more of that.
You're not alone. You know, it's so good to hear you cite loneliness. Vivek Murthy, our former Surgeon General, you know, it's his whole mission is to combat loneliness in the United States. 30% of Americans feel it, you know. One of the most amazing scientific findings, just to make contact with what you're saying about how much we miss what this practice does, which is orient to somebody, look at them. One of my favorite findings on this is there's just something powerful about looking into somebody's eyes. So powerful that there's data showing when I look at a friend's eyes or a child's eyes, it activates oxytocin release, which is this neuropeptide that is distributed in your brain and your body that helps you take care of people and connect. So it's a very deep thing we're missing. Just the quiet and the tone of voice that you have when you're listening to Dana and just the softness of the question. So I thought your quiet had a real strength to it. Where did you learn how to listen? Who taught you how to listen?
When I was younger, there was a lot of chaos in the neighborhood that I grew up in, and you know, it was very low income, and it was public housing. And so for me, my escape were books. And that was, you know, it was a very quiet thing to do. So I was always receiving information. And I don't like to put things out until I've really processed things. So I like to take stuff in. And so I think it was just the way that I am as a person, you know. There's also a part of listening that is empathetic.
Yeah, profoundly.
And I think I'm a very empathetic person, especially if you're telling me something really hard to tell somebody.
So one of my favorite quotes related to active listening is about Abraham Lincoln. And it's a quote by Thurlow Weed, who was a journalist during Lincoln's era. And he was asked, like, what is the genius of this guy, Lincoln, who's poor and kind of awkward, doesn't dress as fancy as the other candidates and so forth? Kind of high-pitched voice, and Weed said, it really is about listening. Like, I'll paraphrase, but he says that Lincoln sees everybody who comes to see him, hears all they have to say, and reads whatever is written to him. So he just was always listening actively. So how are you going to pull this off in your position?
I know. No pressure. Thanks. One of the most frustrating things as a journalist most recently during, you know, after this election was the fact that I don't think the media was listening. They were hearing it, but they weren't listening. They didn't take seriously enough a lot of the language that was being used. I'm glad to see more journalists getting on board with good reporting. That
yes.
doesn't mean partisan reporting. It means you're calling this what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I do read emails. I do read tweets. I do try to engage as much as I can with people. And I take this very seriously.
You're right in the thick of it. And I worry so, having studied, you know, my lab studies the class divide, which is, I think, worse than, you know, at almost any time in American history. You've written about stereotype threat and all the racial divides, sexual harassment, you know, including in the media, which has been rampant, speaks to this gender divide. Do you think listening is part of how we go forward?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think enough listening happens. I think, unfortunately, especially to women and especially to women of color, to poor people and the elderly, who we listen to is often, you know, who has the most power or who has the most money. And usually those two things go hand in hand. And you know, women of color have historically not had power or money. In the next couple of decades, women of color collectively, i.e. Black, Latina, Asian, and Native women, will be the majority of women in the United States.
Yep.
And so someone's going to have to listen to us. And I hope that people will begin to really listen to us going forward.
We've done a lot of research on class and ethnicity and power, and we consistently find women tend to be more empathetic, better listeners. They don't interrupt as much. You probably heard about that finding about the Supreme Court where men are interrupting women in the Supreme Court. Do you think your upbringing and your class and ethnicity had something to do with your...
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that that is a big part of it. And there's always this weird dynamic between being, you know, women, I think in general, but Latinas in particular, have the stereotypes when you think of them are you're either not so smart or you're just this hyper aggressive, you know, can't shut up kind of thing. And it's so I think that has a role in how we feel about communicating. So I think there was also a struggle to understand how much I could say when I could say it. I think the implicit messages to women, people of color, poor people, you know, and at one point I was all of those things.
Yeah.
Is that your opinion doesn't matter. No one really cares what you have to say. And that's expressed at different levels, even in the professional world. And I think this is where you have things like microaggressions. It's not that people might not even be aware of the fact that they're not listening to you or not taking you seriously, but just implicitly they don't. And so I think that for me, it's been always tricky. Like, I do sometimes tend to interrupt people, and I will say that. And that is one of my failings, which was, you know, something that I do think about. But it's also because I'm always trying to figure out when's the right time to say something, or if I get really excited about something, you know, can I just burst in and say it? But also, as I've gotten older, I've said, you know what, I do need to claim my space and
exactly.
My voice.
Absolutely. Just that analysis reveals the complexities of power, right? That, you know, just in the simple act of whether you contribute to a conversation or not, being from your background imbues that act with such complexity that other people might not think about. So, you know, one of the things that gives me hope right now, not only is looking forward to hearing you host The Takeaway, but also the themes that are going to emerge in this listening that you're engaging in. Tanzina, what an honor to have you on our show. And I can't wait to see where you take your thinking and the work you're doing in the world.
Thacker, thank you for asking me to participate.
We'll talk more about the benefits of active listening after this short break. This podcast is supported by The Great Courses Plus. Learning something new can bring us so much happiness, and The Great Courses Plus gives you unlimited access to explore and learn about almost any topic. Here's one that I think is great for all of you Science of Happiness listeners. It's a brand new course called iRest, Integrative Restoration Yoga Nidra for Deep Relaxation. iRest is a research-based form of deep meditation that allows us to hold on to a sense of peace in this ever-changing world. Potential benefits of improved sleep, pain relief, stress management, even healing from trauma. iRest expert Molly Burkholm guides us through the meditations in this 10-step practice while exploring the science behind it. We think you will really like The Great Courses Plus, and we've arranged a special limited offer for our listeners so you can try it yourself. It's a full month of unlimited access for free. You must sign up now through our special URL, thegreatcoursesplus.com/happiness. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/happiness. One of the really underappreciated dimensions to healthy social connections is active listening. And we're learning that active listening is a hallmark of great leadership. It makes teams smarter. And one of my favorite studies that really illuminates the benefits of active listening was carried out by Wager and colleagues.
We brought undergrad participants to our lab and had them talk to another undergrad in what we call the get-to-know-you conversation. But the person the participant talked to was working for us as a Confederate. And we trained the Confederates to respond to the participants in one of three different ways. The first response was to do just the nonverbal part of active listening without saying anything. The second was to have them give advice. And then the third was to do the full-blown active listening response. And we found the participants reported feeling the Confederate understood them better when they received active listening responses compared to either getting the advice or just the nonverbal cues. But what makes active listening different than just paying attention is the verbal response, which involves paraphrasing the speaker's message. You have to put the speaker's message into your own words to show you understand. So you might say, "Sounds like you had a great time on your bike ride through Marin yesterday," versus something like, "You went to Marin on your bike." I mean, I don't think multitasking started with the millennials. It's just a habit we get into where we're interested in a television show and the person sitting next to us wants to talk. And, you know, we're just used to paying half attention to a person rather than making eye contact, facing the person. We do that a lot early in relationships. You know, you go on a date and you make eye contact and you're holding hands with the person and they have your full attention, but somewhere along the line, we start to drift away from that. And so John Gottman, one of the premier marriage researchers, did a study and found that almost none of his couples did active listening naturally. The good thing about active listening is it kind of gives you a formula. So if that's not the way you normally listen to someone, then you have some guidelines, you know, to help you. Feeling understood by another person is a very basic part of feeling accepted and valued. And it's a building block for relationships of all kinds.
If you'd like to try the active listening practices or other practices like it, go to our website, Greater Good in Action, that's ggia.berkeley.edu, and then call us at 510-519-4903 and let us know how it went. I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining me for The Science of Happiness. Our podcast is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRI, with production assistance from Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our producer is Jane Bach. Production assistant is Lee Mengistu. Executive producer is Jason Marsh. Special thanks to UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. Our original music is by David Michelle Ruddy. Funding for this episode of The Science of Happiness was provided by Alan Spivak. You can learn more about The Science of Happiness and find related articles, videos, quizzes, all kinds of stuff on our website, greatergood.berkeley.edu. And shoot us an email. Tell us what you think about what you heard. Send it to greater@berkeley.edu.